Our next speaker, who will speak on the Kenneth Goldstein Collection at the University of Mississippi, is Greg Johnson. And Greg is blues curator and associate professor at the University of Mississippi, where he's managed the blues archive since 2002. He received his master's of library and information science from the University of Southern Mississippi in 2002, where he also received a bachelor of music in history and literature in 2000. He has served as president of the Society of Mississippi Archivists. Ron, you don't know that and you look so young. He was a consulting editor for the Encyclopedia of the Blues, published by Routledge in 2006, and is currently co-authoring 100 Essential Blues Books for Scarecrow Press, which is scheduled for publication in 2013. Greg's main instrument, he tells me, is the double bass, but if the definition of an optimist is a trombonist with a pager, I would say that Greg is something of a triple optimist because aside from playing guitar, he also plays trombone, Celtic harp, and bodhran. Greg Johnson.
Thank you very much. Move this up just a tad. Dr. Kenneth Goldstein, known as Kenny to his many friends, was a folklorist, record producer, collector, teacher, folk festival organizer, editor, chairman of the Department of Folklore and Folklife at the University of Pennsylvania, and he served as president of the American Folklore Society for a time. He was born in Brooklyn to Latvian and English parents. Though originally obtaining degrees in business administration as well as mathematics and statistics, his love of folk music from the Anglo-Celtic Isles would take him in a different direction. First, to working in the record industry, and later, to receiving the first PhD in folklore and folklife at the University of Pennsylvania, where he would eventually become director. From his time starting at Stinson Records in 1951 through around 62, he would go on to produce and edit over 500 recordings for Riverside, Prestige, and 10 other labels. He produced some of the first recordings of folk music on LP, artists such as Josh White, Sonny Terry, Brownie McGee, Woody Guthrie, Lead Belly, Reverend Gary Davis, and many others. These are just a few label scans here. In a 1979 interview with Peter Narvaez at Memorial University in Newfoundland, Goldstein recalled his first real production. This was of Gary Davis and Sonny Terry. Quote, "It was a horrible record because the engineer did a bad mix and the harmonica totally overloaded the guitar. The main reason for recording it was to have blind Gary Davis's guitar on the record with Sonny just as a background, and somehow the recording engineer got his channels mixed up and they went ahead and issued the record totally against my wishes." When working for Stinson in Riverside, Goldstein wanted to record musicians in proper studios. But the labels just didn't have the money, so he became, in essence, his own audio engineer in order to help reduce expenses. He often recorded in living rooms and other non-studio locations. Kenneth Goldstein also had an influence on some of the most important figures in blues scholarship and recording history. He had people like Sam Charters, Chris Strachowitz, and Art Rosenbaum record several artists for him on some of their recording and research trips. I was first introduced to his name through the many liner notes he wrote for various blues and American folk recordings. Goldstein was instrumental in developing the way liner notes were written for folk albums. Goldstein told Peter Narvaez, quote, "I was furious about the fact that on classical music albums, there were usually notes which told about the composer and the musicians who were playing in the orchestra, etc. And they gave you quite a bit of developmental information about the material itself. I was furious that folk music was treated like pop music and that you didn't get notes. What you got was a blurb. Not enough people know what folk music is. Why not give them some information? I could talk about the text. I could talk about the relationships of songs to each other. And I thought also that the singer was important, his background, his culture. Later on, when I started working in the folk song revival with mostly revival singers, I thought that the singers themselves should put down their own autobiographies. My idea was that if you put the information on the backliner, then you will develop a more intelligent-sounding disc jockey who is going to play that stuff. What we developed was a far more intelligent audience about folk music. They weren't simply reacting to music, they were listening to music and absorbing it in an intellectual as well as in a spiritual and physical sense. Dr. Goldstein's role in helping shape the folk revival has not received as much attention as I think it should. Certainly his early recordings and productions for Stinson, Riverside, etc. had an influence on the revival, but he also actively brought folk musicians to America to perform at universities, festivals, and other venues. The Irish musician and scholar Mick Maloney says that it was Kenneth Goldstein who encouraged the Clancy brothers and Tommy Makem to make their first record at a time when they were unsure about performing publicly at all. Liam Clancy made his first recording in Kenny and Rochelle's apartment. And this is Mick Maloney's words here. Rochelle actually was holding her hand over their baby daughter Rhoda's mouth to keep her quiet during crucial takes. Dr. Goldstein also co-founded the Philadelphia Folk Festival in 1962, which brought in many folk musicians, storytellers, and artists from all over the world. Dr. Goldstein was also an avid collector of folklore and music. In an interview with Steve Winnick for Dirty Linen magazine, Mick Maloney remembers the first time he stayed at the Goldsteins' house in 1971. God almighty, I couldn't leave it. I used to stay up all night reading these books. I was fascinated with folklore, and all the mysteries behind those books were irresistible. His collections are dispersed among several institutions, including the University of Pennsylvania, Memorial University in Newfoundland, Middle Tennessee State University, and the University of Mississippi. This slide actually shows Kenneth Goldstein on the right, looking through some of the American broadsides with Paul Wells, former director of the Center for Popular Music at MTSU. One of Dr. Goldstein's students was Bill Ferris. He was former director of the Center for the Study of Southern Culture at the University of Mississippi. It is because of him that we first acquired materials from Goldstein in 1979. We had a later accretion in 1997. So far, we have cataloged over 20,000 items in this collection at the University of Mississippi. We're still going. There are over 12,000 books, over 500 commercial cassettes, 5,000 LPs, over 2,000 scores, over 245s, and a lot more. We also have a number of non-commercial recordings that aren't cataloged in MARC, but rather described in finding aids. We have almost 1,000 non-commercial cassette tapes, 850 audio reels, over 1,000 broadsides, and much more. In 2008 and 2009, I scanned all 1,060 broadsides from this collection. Over the next months, a colleague and I, along with student workers, created all of the metadata for these scans and uploaded the collection into Content DM. Last year, we were able to send the 850 audio reels from this collection out for digitization by George Blood Audio. I have spent the majority of this year working on the metadata. Luckily, most of the tape audio was, in fact, what was written on the box. I was very happy about that. However, there were a lot of difficult words to decipher, handwriting that I couldn't make out, and many that were mislabeled or labeled with insufficient information. Luckily, I do happen to know a lot of the names of the various jigs, reels, and hornpipes on some of the recordings. Whether they're the titles that the performers used or not, that's another story. We have now loaded every one of these audio files into Content DM, and this is going up soon. Because we don't have full interview release forms for the interview subjects and performers captured on these tapes, we are currently going to limit access for all of these materials by IP address to computers in the J.D. Williams Library, where the archive is located. The next phase of the project is to get a better understanding of all of the rights, etc. I'm also currently digitizing 757 non-commercial audio cassettes in this collection. And as I'm the only one doing this, and it's in-house, it's going to take a little while. So maybe we'll get lucky and be awarded a grant or find a generous donor. So I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the items that we have recently digitized. I'm going to start with some of the broadsides. I'll talk briefly about those. The broadsides in the Kenneth Goldstein collection went to two institutions. Middle Tennessee State University got the American broadsides, and the University of Mississippi got the broadsides that were printed in Ireland, England, and Scotland. And our collection includes pieces printed from the late 18th century through the early 20th century. The majority were printed in 19th century England. So in case you're not familiar with broadsides, these are essentially single sheets with printing on one side that would often be hung in public spaces or sold in public spheres. You can think of them kind of as a combination of often as of tabloid journalism with an advertising flyer in many cases. They date back at least to 1523, but they were very popular in the 18th and 19th centuries. Here are a few from the collection that we've digitized. These are all freely available online. Broadsides often featured recent scandals. Execution broadsides were particularly popular. We have a lot of execution ones. Some scholars talk about these selling, printing these up very quickly and selling them at public executions. Fun stuff. Yeah. So, and broadside ballads often captured news, scandal, and gossip of the day in the form of lyrics set to popular tunes. The broadsides in the Goldstein collection are useful tools to getting a glimpse into issues affecting late 18th and 19th century Ireland, Scotland, and England. Several recurring themes appear in this collection of broadsides: nagging wives, brutal landlords, adultery, comic lovers, class distinctions, etc. A quick glance at the very first six subjects listed, abandoned children, abduction, absentee fathers, abused children, abused husbands, abused women. Happy little collection we have here. Almost half of the pieces in the Goldstein collection deal with man-woman relationships. Of this, about 30 have spousal abuse as a major subject. One of the most intriguing themes to appear is the portrayal of violent power struggles over gender and identity. Men hitting women, and likewise women beating their husbands over the head with ladles in a struggle to determine who will wear the breeches, is a subject which appears over and over again in this collection. Since this is a conference of recorded sound collections, I want to focus the rest of the talk on the items that we have recently digitized. Now, we do have thousands of commercially produced recordings on 78, LP, cassette, etc. I'll stick with the non-commercially released material on open reel and cassette tapes. The reels were recorded between 1956 and 86. The cassettes were recorded in the 1970s through around 1990. They feature all manner of folk music and folklore. There are recordings of live performances at the University of Pennsylvania and various folk festivals, recordings of singing, instrumental, and storytelling workshops, recordings of body song lectures, tellings of various folk tales and stories, interviews with people telling some of the filthiest jokes you've ever heard in your life. Well, I don't know. This is an arts conference. You guys probably... there are a few photos of some of the pieces that we have that Goldstein recorded, various musicians here. Did a lot of his research. I mean, he had a Fulbright to Scotland. He was there in 58 and 59. But he did every year. He went in the summers to Newfoundland to record various folk singers. A lot of the recordings are useful in showing the influence of Irish, Scottish, and English folk music and folklore on folk traditions in the United States and Canada. Indeed, this is a major part of Dr. Goldstein's studies. You can see this pattern in some of his early record productions. On the Unfortunate Rake album for Folkways, he traces songs like St. James Infirmary and The Streets of Laredo back to the 18th century ballad, The Unfortunate Rake. There are a number of tapes of recitations of stories or the singing of various folk songs in this collection. And Dr. Goldstein always asks where the performers learn these songs or stories from and from whom. Let me play you a little example here. This was recorded up in Newfoundland. I can give my.
This song is called Bungaroy. As I was a walking down London's fine street, a fair pretty damsel I chanced for to meet. A fair pretty damsel unto me she did cry, "If you want any liquor, come by Bungaroy." Died little dum de lum de lum day.
Who'd you learn that song from?
I think I learned that from my father. I
said, how old would you have been when you first sang it?
When I first heard it, I was probably in my early teens. I know I sang it before I was out of high school.
So you would have been, what, 16, 15?
When I learned it, I'd say probably about 13, 14, you know.
Frank, did you ever hear it sung with a different chorus than that, or was that the typical one?
That was the one that I learned, and the only one I've heard, really.
Because it's usually got another chorus.
Yeah.
That's the first time I've heard that.
So there are also a lot of Utah Phillips recordings in this collection, including an interview where he talks for 34 minutes about the piece Moose Turd Pie. Goldstein keeps asking for just about every detail of how Phillips learned the song. I'm not going to play you all 34 minutes of this, but I'm going to play this little example from 1971.
We told stories. I learned a lot of great stories that night. But for one thing, Hazen sang Moose Turd Pie. I don't think that he accompanied himself.
Now, when did you first hit Moose Turd Pie from Lawson? Do you know what the dates were roughly?
Good heavens! Now, about 1961 or two.
And when would Barry? Then when would this thing with Barry having heard it from Hazen?
1965, I'd say, or 66.
1965 or 66.
One of the more prolific storytellers and singers he recorded is Sarah Cleveland. There are almost 50 reels of her singing and telling various tales. I haven't gone through the collection enough to know if she repeats herself on any of the tapes, but what a memory she must have had. A number of folk musicians added tunes and songs to their collections. Actually, forgot I had a clip of her. Let me play you a little clip here if I can get, can't get my pointer to, there we go.
My mother used to tell us that her father would tell them a story about something that happened in Ireland. He said one night his mother and father were in the bed asleep, and the mother woke up suddenly and reached over where the baby should be lying, and the baby was gone. So she called to her husband, "Quick, quick, the baby's gone." So they jumped out of bed and lit a candle, and they found the baby way over by the door. So they ran over and picked the baby up and brought her over to the bed and looked her over, and she was all right, except she had a red mark on her side. And they always said that was where the fairies had grabbed her when they pulled her over to the door. And if they hadn't found her just then, that the fairies would have stolen her, and they never would have seen her again. But she had that mark until the day she died.
So a lot of musicians added to their repertoire by listening to recordings from Kenneth Goldstein's massive collection. In the clip I'm about to play, Cattle McConnell, the flute player for Boys of the Loch, talks about listening to recordings at Kenneth Goldstein's house. Well, I don't know, there it is.
Last August, when we were over here, we happened to be staying in Kenny Goldstein's. And, of course, I spent a lot of my time looking over. Kenny has some very good records, and I was looking over some of these records to see what material I could see. And I come across an old EP of Seamus Ennis. And He played an air on it, which is called the Clea Kilcreggan.
Yeah, in addition to purely academic potential of this collection, the audio offers a trove of songs and tunes for musicians wishing to expand their repertoire. Here's a clip. This is Moira Nihahisika. I think I got that right. Close. And she's playing Carolyn's Farewell to Music. This is from the 1984 Philadelphia Folk Festival. Joseph Heaney was born in 1919 in Connemara, County Galway. He came to America in 1965 to first sing at the Newport Folk Festival. Heaney was one of the major proponents of the chanos, or old-style a cappella tradition, bringing a memorized repertoire of over 500 songs he learned as a boy. Here's a song. There we go. He sings about O'Brien of Tipperary in this example.
O'Brien from Tipperary is the subject of my tale. Before the Civil War began, to America he came. He was a good character, his spirits were light and free, and by a draft he won the North against the enemy.
So Goldstein even managed to capture performer disputes on tape. I'm not really sure who this is in this example, as the box was unlabeled. Probably just as well that I don't mention the subjects of the spat. And here we go. If I can get the pointer to appear. There we go.
And then tune your guitar.
No, my guitar is tuned. I will not retune.
His tape recorder's on. No, it's not running.
I don't care if his tape recorder is on. I'm not retuning.
You want me to play instead of you playing? You have to retune. Somebody has to retune.
Do you know what's the difference?
You have to retune.
I refuse to retune.
Well, then one of us is going to have to refrain from playing.
Listen, if you sing loud enough, it'll cover up.
I'll play very softly.
Please tune your
no!
Your A string is just about 2 notes sharp. We have to have an argument while we're being taped.
Yes!
It goes on for some time, actually. So this has just been a small sampling of the more than 1,000 hours of audio in an amazing collection of folk songs and folklore. Anyone interested in folk traditions from Newfoundland and Labrador, the Adirondacks, or Pennsylvania, and their antecedents in Ireland, Scotland, and England, will find a wealth of information in this collection. Dr. Kenneth Goldstein was one of the most important figures in folklore and the folk revival, and I'm happy to say that we've made more of his legacy accessible. Thank you.
Oh, sure.
We have a few minutes for questions.
Did he ever do any air checks of programs like Gene Shea's program on folk music in Philadelphia?
So he's asking if he did any air checks from certain programs like from Philadelphia. If he did, I don't believe that I've run across any of those. He may have, they're not in this collection. The collection is dispersed among four different institutions, maybe even more than that. I don't recall hearing any of those specifically in our collection. Okay, thanks.